Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We've been having a bunch of very serious, highly organized programs. Today, we're going to have a free-form discussion, right, Mike?
That's right. If I'm involved, Mike Cosentino's involved, it's not organized. We have that.
We're going to be all over the place.
We have records for that.
Yeah, we're going to be all over the place and relax, and we have a guest with us who is... going to be more organized than we are.
We got the best guest.
Yes, the best guest.
The best.
A sponsor of the show, Steve
Guess what
Segner.
We're going to talk about this morning.
Yeah. Steve Segner of El Portal. And he's a sponsor of the show. What I know about Steve is
more
that...
More importantly, he's a politically savvy guy.
Yes, and he's willing to talk...
Who did not pay for the seat that he's sitting in right
That's
now.
That's true, Michael. And he's willing to talk to conservatives. I've seen his Facebook page. And he's arguing with guys who think they're very, very smart, who are climate deniers in 2017. I must say, I just wouldn't talk to him. I mean, if they don't get it by 2017 that there's climate change and it's human cause, well, I hope somebody else talks to them and it's you. And then you talk to this, what was the silly thing, that the guy posted last week, he was in some sort of denial of I can't remember it. What was
so many silly things are posted on a weekly basis that you can have a philosophy where you just say, well, the heck with it and just let them think that way. Or you come back and you start asking questions. And what I tend to do is I ask questions and I ask questions and pretty soon they paint themselves into a corner. And then they usually shut down. But the idea is that I like talking to people that have a different view. Actually, it helps me focus on my views. And it also helps me focus to say, am I correct in my views? It makes me entertain my thought process and say, am I really right on this subject? And I go back and I think about it a little more. So it's good to talk. Not good to yell, but it's good to talk.
Of all the people I know, Steve is the most engaged with the far right and the right, the most willing to send letters and publications and posts to really right-wing things. And they don't seem to like you much, but you do it anyway.
But that's okay. I think the idea is that by having a discussion out there, we all think a little bit more. The idea, I read something the other day that one of these people posted that America should be run like a business. And I thought about that a little bit, and I thought, well, no, it shouldn't be run like a business. The idea is a business produces a profit. That's its end game.
Yeah.
And the idea of government is to produce a product. Okay, it's to produce a service, and the two are entirely different.
Absolutely, the betterment of society is not at the heart, and especially of the corporations. The corporate behavior doesn't seem to be, and that should be the goal of government. A business. I just heard on NPR to give credit, profit good, losses bad.
Mm-hmm.
In government, it doesn't work that way, especially the Constitution was never designed to accommodate business. But that doesn't stop or spot. We're talking about Donald Trump this morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to try to have an organized discussion about a completely chaotic mind. If there's one word that's associated with Donald Trump, it's chaos. Mm-hmm. He is setting up his son-in-law in an office right now mm-hmm. to do exactly what we're talking about, to run government like a business. No matter how many times the experts say, you can get advice from business. They could tell you how to manage information. They could tell you how
to correct.
It would be nice mm-hmm. if the Pentagon knew where its money was going. They need some business advice over there. But that's the other thing we want to talk about. Trump setting up his children and every friend he ever had. Running the government.
A psychologist I know says, and I think I may have mentioned it before, that Trump is a borderline personality that thrives on. It's a technical term, Mike. But
I got it.
It's not like you know. But a borderline personality
thrive on creating chaos. And he said that the difference between Putin, who's a sociopath, and Trump, who's a borderline personality, is Putin produces order, oppressive order, but order.
Right.
Trump, trying to do what he does, creates chaos, because that's where he, that's where his mind is. That's where his, that's what he's generating.
Well, but, that seems obvious and true. And so I'm having a discussion online right now with a conservative about maligning the president by using the word mental and mentally ill. And I've sent letters to our representation claiming the 25th Amendment should be, and I don't have the verbiage of the 25th Amendment in front of me, but basically it says if the chief executive is incapacitated, you can replace him. And there are procedures in Congress to do that.
It takes what most of the cabinet to do that and the vice president.
Yeah.
To replace the president.
But then we'd have our vice president as president, and I don't know that that would be such a great
thing. You know
what?
We can slay these dragons one at a time. That's all I'm getting at. No, I truly believe that no matter how much I disagree with the vice president, Pence, he is not addled
That's
as
true.
The president.
That's true. Correct.
One reason I invited Steve in today was that he's written a letter I thought was very interesting about business and as a successful business guy, you saw your competitors take your customers away and then you saw them come back to you. And you have a letter that you circulated in all these right-wing publications about this idea.
Well, the idea is that my background's marketing, and if you have a product you sell, sometimes it's better that if your customer tries a competitor's product. If you truly have the best razor, then the best thing for you is to have them try a competitor's razor that burns their face. Well, Trump is right now the bad product, and I think we're all experiencing this poor product. And I think we're going to have to go through this phase where America is burned by this razor. That being said, I think people are going to come back and want stability, they're going to want calm, and they're going to want decent management. So I think this is a cycle we're going to have to go through, as painful as it is, and as much as it's going to hurt people.
And it's not just Trump, it's the Republican Congress. So they pass year after year resolutions against Obamacare, denounced it and stuff, but when it was time for them to take over and produce something as a replacement, they couldn't do it.
Well, the Republicans are great on talk. You know, it's wonderful to say we want to lower the deficit. And then they turn around and they say, but we want to lower taxes and we want to build the infrastructure. And, well, you can't do all these things. This is great to sit back and talk for the last 8 years, but now the rubber's going to meet the road.
They actually have to do it. Then.
They're going to have to do something. And Trump's in a situation where, you know, how are you going to go out and borrow $1 trillion in a Congress that's not going to let you raise the debt limit?
Now, we are talking about two different things. We are talking about the Republican Party and some of their policies of no. And quite frankly, Republicans can't govern, according to some people.
Well, is that it's not just Trump who's chaotic. Rollout of that of the most important piece of legislation that they've been talking about for almost a decade was a disaster. I mean, they were loyal. A lot of them supported it out of loyalty. I don't think anybody thought that was a good plan.
Well,
throwing 24 million people off of the rolls.
Well,
those 24 million people have all relatives and friends. You know, it's going to be 100 million people.
Well, it was a sad piece of legislation. It was a tax cut. It had nothing to do with very little to do with medicine, and people recognize that. So now we got Paul Ryan. You know, here we got this supposedly the intellectual base of the Republican Party, and then you take Trump, and who's the leader as being president and just winning this election, as leader of the Republican Party. You take these two completely dysfunctional units. And you find exactly what you're getting.
I think something that Mike said is important.
It can't govern.
I think what he's saying is important. And I think because if you look at any Republican plan practically, what's the key, what's the overlining thing that they're always trying to do? And when they talk about the deficit or whatever the general bull is, their bottom line is cutting taxes on wealthy folks. That's, and making sure businesses can make, make more money.
Well, the gentleman from New York, Franks, said getting Republicans to govern is like having me judge the Miss America contest. And, of course, Franks has been an out gay guy for all his life. And it's a good analogy. So now you take – and I want to get back to Trump's personalities that we're talking about, narcissistic personality disorder. I'm looking at a letter here from three – I'm going to read who they are. We're talking about Judith Herman from the Harvard Medical School, Nanette Gartel from assistant professor of psychiatry from the Harvard Medical School, and University of California, San Francisco, D. Moshbacker, Ph.D. And they're talking about narcissistic personality disorder from the DSM. Five. Anybody who's ever spent, every school psychologist has sat down and knows, and for that matter, many teachers do for that matter, know the, this is the, I don't want to say the Bible, but the, certainly the description of all the.
Yes, yeah, it's the fundamental right. document in psychology.
The Diagnostic and Statistic Manual.
Yes.
And so I'm going to just read a few of these and tell me if this sounds familiar. He has a grandiose sense of self-importance, preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love, believes that he or she is special and unique and can only be understood or should be associated only with special people, high status people, requires excessive admiration, has a sense of entitlement. Now, part of the problem with having someone like this in leadership, these psychiatrists say, people with narcissistic personality disorder are extremely sensitive and insecure. They psychologically require constant compliments and acknowledgement because they do not have their own internal self-esteem.
So he's been in a cocoon of all this support, and now he's out in the open more. He can't, and that's why I think somebody mentioned earlier, maybe it was Steve, his son-in-law gets one high-powered post, his daughter gets another high-powered post. He can't expand out of the circle that tells him how wonderful he is and bring in a lot of strangers.
He has almost 3,000 appointees he has not made because he wants smaller government. Well, these appointees are people who actually run divisions and manage people. He's going to run it like a small mom and pop operation. He's going to have 10 or 12 key people.
Right.
And government can't be run that way. He talks about how good looking his candidates are. What great schools they came from. Mm-hmm. And I really think that what he's trying to do, he's a New Jersey or Queens boy who's trying to make it in New York City. And he was never accepted in New York City. So now he hires the guys and the people from Goldman Sachs and the people who are in the top tier of New York City. And they all work for him now. So it goes to what you're saying.
Exactly. And here's the problem with, and Trump could be as nuts as he wants. And I guess there's been other presidents that, haven't been fully functional.
Well, some of them have been sort of senile, toward the end of their
term.
In the 19th century.
The president of the United States is the commander in chief and the only American who has any say over the mobilization of the United States military, the authorization of military strike on perceived or real enemy, and the launch of any of nuclear weapons, including the 7,000 nuclear warheads that we have. There is no failsafe. There is no thoughtful review here.
No.
Now, Congress declares war, but the commander-in-chief has an incredible amount of power. So the fear that the columnists keep expressing, the Paul Krugmans, the Atlantic, that this is where the fear is coming from, and it's justifiable.
And, they're already talking about folks who probably don't follow that there's a war in Yemen. The war in Yemen is between a kind of persecuted Shiite religious group and the dominant Sunni group. And the Shiite folks overthrew, they've been long suffering, and they overthrew the Sunnis. But they're supported by Iran, and Sunnis are supported by Saudi Arabia. So there's this fight really between tribal people with one of these two divisions of Islam. What are we doing? I mean, Trump and group is talking about expanding our involvement in the war in Yemen. What is our interest in this fight except to support human rights?
Well, it's all about oil. It's always been about oil. Otherwise, we wouldn't care. But if it disrupts oil, it disrupts shipments, or disrupts our relationship with Saudi Arabia, it always comes back to Saudi Arabia.
They're cultivating that.
They're the silent partner. They're the one that we need to keep that relationship going with because of oil.
Steve, you'll love this. Maureen Dowd, a writer I don't admire, wrote in the New York Times in the last couple of days. This is she wrote to Donald Trump, and she said, "I've known you all my life. I was born here. I was born by here." She meant Washington. Mm-hmm. You during the campaign, you said you didn't want to be a politician. She said, "Believe me, nobody will confuse you with a politician." Mm-hmm. And that was not. It was an insult.
Yeah.
She also said, "But and at this point, nobody will confuse you with a negotiator either. You are a sucker. And you are the worst kind of sucker in this town. You are a sucker for the establishment," mm-hmm, "of all things, the establishment of Washington. You can't sell your product here." And, you know, this goes right to your wheelhouse, Steve. I'm going to put you on the spot, even though we didn't talk about this. Why? And we started talking about it at the beginning of the show, but I'd like you to expand on it. Or maybe it was before the show. Why can't Trump sell his product? Why is it been, and everyone is predicting, going to continue to be so dismal?
I think his product is the wrong product. I think what happened, he got elected by disenfranchised men in the Midwest who were looking for jobs, looking for a lifestyle they didn't get. They came out and they voted. I think he also got elected by people who didn't particularly like Hillary.
Right.
And I think you people who also said, "Well, let's give it a shot. What do I got to lose?"
A lot of that.
So that was his constituency. So you sit back now. If he's going to be reelected in 4 years, he has to get all of those people plus another 10%.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to happen. And I think what's really going to happen is that somebody's going to come out of the ether, and they're going to come out of social media, and they're going to come out of Hollywood, and they're going to be likable, they're going to have good ideas, they're going to be respected. And people are going to want someone like Eisenhower. They're going to want someone that's calm and soothing. We're all going to be so tired of Trump at the end of 4 years.
Tired of chaos.
What he should be doing now is trying to add on to his constituency instead of pushing them away.
Well, that's another question, Steve and Mike, and that is that the Freedom Caucus, the real right-wing extremists, and Gosar, for example, who's Mike's representative, is one of those folks. They have enough votes to block any kind of conservatively moderate plan that Donald Trump would want. I mean, it's their block plus some moderates that stopped the bad reform of Obamacare. Thank goodness. But, I don't know that he has the flexibility to do this, but the obvious move is to try to recruit some Democrats. Because if as long as that block can block essentially everything he wants to do, and he has to negotiate with them, and they wouldn't even compromise.
Well,
no matter
what
he
politician
did.
Would do that. A politician would go for getting his laws passed. And so what he would do is he would go to the Democrats, he would form a coalition, they'd work on Obamacare, they'd fix it. But what happens is he'd have to leave his core people. Now, if he left it, a politician would leave his core people. But Trump needs to be able to go to rallies, have people wear funny hats and shirts, and tell him how great he is. He's never going to be willing to give that up for the bigger idea. He doesn't have the bigger idea. The idea, he gets up every morning and says, "How do I get on TV? How do I get on TV in a positive way?
How do I get him talking about me?"
Me.
Just for the record, there's 240 Republicans in the House, and there's 194 Democrats. So when we're talking about 29 or so in the Freedom Caucus, that's why you say, well, how can these 29 guys, including Gosar, have such power?
And what is it? You need 212 votes, Mike, to pass something like that.
Yeah.
If you have 30 guys, right, are not going to go along with anything, and you insist that only Republicans...
And they look stronger by actually not going along. You know, the more obstinate they are, the more their constituents love them. So they really do not need to negotiate.
So if Trump was really flexible, it's time to talk to the Democrats. Call Chuck Schumer in. Mm-hmm. He's a guy you can make a deal with. We all know that. I mean, some Democrats don't like him because of that, but call him in and make some deals to reform Obamacare because it needs some help. And mainly because it's been sabotaged by Republicans.
Let's assume that happens. Now he's going to lose his defense of the Republicans because people are going to go after him for crimes. They're going to go after him for all the things that he's done. What's going to happen?
Right.
He's all of a sudden they'll start having committee meetings. That'll start into his past. They'll want to look into his tax reforms in his tax papers.
Right.
So if he loses that, they'll turn on him, and then all of a sudden with this idea of impeachment will come to the surface because they'll be willing to talk
impeachment.
Nobody
took that seriously because you got a Republican control house, Republican controls it.
Yeah.
But speaking of control, when you are controlling your vehicle and you want to make a great deal on a place to stay, you can go to El Portal. One of our wonderful supporters here at Democratic Perspective, a cute little boutique hotel. I brought my lady friend there the other day and she just fell in love with the place. We might take a vacation from Cottonwood if we can afford a night at El Portal.
I'm sure we could work something out.
And they have great breakfasts too, and a great staff over there that to take care of you for breakfast. We've have many breakfasts over there and have enjoyed them. So El Portal, one of our great sponsors, as long with Democrats of the Red Rocks. Please go to their webpage and look at their wonderful speakers for some of their upcoming breakfast. Yeah. By the end of the show, we'll find the information and tell you about Democrats of the Red Rocks. If you've had enough, if you want to do something, if you want to become an activist, we have Democrats of the Red Rocks locally. We have the women. The Women's March of Sedona, they call themselves.
We have a bunch of different huddles based on indivisible. And we do want to talk next week about the relationship of all these new groups and all this incredible new energy on the Democratic part and the party itself. Because, Democratic Perspective is Democratic with a small D, even though, I pretty much vote Democratic.
We've argued about New Perspective, but we don't want to change the name.
Yeah.
One of the things about the Democratic Party that's hard is it has a lot of people with liberal ideas that want to do good things, and they're not as focused as the Republicans. The Republicans is almost a religion on taxes and government spending.
Very consistent.
It's very consistent, and it's easy if you have that, you think that way, you can join that. We Democrats, we all have our little things that we want to do and work on individually. And so it's a broader spectrum. It's harder to pull us all together, but we need to get together for the next election.
But what about this weird ideology, like the guy doesn't believe in climate change, apparently a very sophisticated fellow. He thinks Islam is not a religion, which if you've ever met Muslims and talked to Muslims, if you think that Islam is not a religion, I mean, it's moronic. I mean, the Catholic Church has known Islam as a religion for the last thousand years or so.
One of the conversation I was having is I was saying that we need to bring some Syrians here. These poor people have been pushed out. We have families that are living in the middle of nowhere. He was saying, well, you can't bring them here because they're an evil people and they're hateful people. And I was saying, no, that's not right. We're making a generalization and we can't do that.
But what drives these ideas, Steve? You're the guy who I know is engaged with talking.
I really think that down deep it's they believe that we're a Christian white nation. And these other people are somehow going to make us less so. And if you go back, this goes all the way back to the 1870s. You know, the Irish came. Every group that came hated the next group that came along. One of my analogies to him was, as more people innocent people are killed in America by SWAT teams accidentally than by terrorism.
Wow.
Okay. And so we can always find things to be fearful of. The most dangerous place for a child in America is driving to school with his mother in the car. You know, mm-hmm. So when you really take and start looking at the numbers, I'm not afraid of Muslims. Will there be attacks here someday? Probably. Will there be terrorist attacks? Yes, there probably will be. But do we stop the inflow of good people who want to settle just because of that fear? Fear is overblown.
That's what they did with Jews during World War II. Americans refused
Japanese.
To let them in. They said German agents will sneak in with these Jewish guys, and so we're not going to take any.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that is an extraordinarily cruel thing to do. And the Syrian, you know, the culture and the people are look and sound and talk differently than we are, but they have the same fundamental issues.
It's un-American. We're denying a country that denies immigrants, a country that denies refugees, as far as I'm concerned, is no longer a country. This is a quote from someone. If you a closed country ceases to exist, and Trump, don't forget, we're talking about this in the context of Donald Trump. He's played on the fears of Americans, as Steve just said, and it worked way better than anybody thought it would. Nobody thought Americans were this angry and this afraid and this stupid, but sure enough, we were.
Every wave that's come to America has brought prosperity a generation behind it. It is American. When I think what you said, that's the American way. It is the American way.
No Trump show as we complete without at least mentioning Robert Mercer, the billionaire, reclusive billionaire, hedge fund libertarian.
You want guy more conservative than the Koch brothers.
Exactly.
We've got the Mercer.
Exactly.
Tell us about the Mercer.
Well,
Mike.
You know what?
I've got about 20 pages.
I want to give credit to the author. I want to talk about Jane Mayer from The New Yorker. I'm looking at a half a pound of
she's
paper.
She's written a great book called Dark Money. That's being widely read now.
Yes, we're going to read it in my book club next month.
Yeah.
The name of her article in The New Yorker was called The Reclusive Hedge Fund Tycoon Behind the Trump Presidency. The subhead is How Robert Mercer Exploited America's Populist Insurgency. And I like when we use the words that we throw around for other countries for our own, like the word insurgency. And that's what we have going on. And what the truck I saw going 85 miles an hour between Cottonwood and Camberti yesterday with the stars and bars on one side of the pickup and the Trump-Pence flag on the other side of the pickup is not that unusual, I guess. They feel
so. Who
feel
are the Mercers
free.
And what are they up to, Mike?
Who are the Mercers? They are the first of all. They despise the let's stick with one here. Robert Mercer despised the Republican establishment. He thinks the leaders are corrupt, crooks, and that they've ruined the country. So that you know, that's the nicest thing I could say. That's one of the nice things I could say about him. One of the things we haven't been afraid of here on Democratic Perspective is saying anything about anyone. But we want to talk about that there is so much to talk about. He based a lot of his funding and a lot of candidates on the research of Patrick Cadell, who advises Trump. Who has advised Trump and has advised Mercer on exactly the kind
he
of
once worked for Bill Clinton,
the kind
and
of politics
moved to the far right.
He was exactly. He was a Democrat. Very good. You get an A for a political awareness here.
Yes.
On
well, you were a great teacher in your day.
You should.
So, I really appreciate that.
You should be a political talk show host. I predict that in your future, but. There is so much here that the Mercers, and like all of these stories, I don't care whether you talk about Clinton backers or Trump backers or Mitt Romney, the wheels or the Koch brothers, especially the Koch spider, Rolling Stone published that. Part of what I would have to do and may do. Is try to connect all the dots, of the Mercers. Well,
for example, the Koch brothers talk to people, say, at NAU who have a program and offer them money with no strings attached. And they're doing this all over the country.
Right.
Can we give you, you want to do, you know, sociology in the public service or philosophy, so we'll give you money. There's no strings. Here, have some money from the Koch brothers. And it's happening all over the country. They're trying to buy their way into controlling academia. I want to read a list of the kind of thing that Mercer and Trump are trying to get rid of. They're trying to fund this by, getting rid of Big Bird, and apparently there was a Donald Grump character on Big Bird, so he hates Sesame Street. But they're cutting Meals on Wheels. Now, is that a good program or what? It serves 2.5 million low-income seniors.
And these programs are less than a rounding point in the budget.
They're nothing. You know,
they're nothing. They don't even show up as a zero in the budget. They're right. So small.
They want to cut aid to poor college students. We want people to integrate into society, become part, really contribute. What's the worst thing we can do is to cut their educational support. I mean, what says that? Heating assistance for low-income people, not a problem in Arizona. But if you're in New England and you don't have a lot of money, you know, if the government has to give you some money to pay for, usually it's fuel oil or something. They want to cut after-school and summer programs for kids. Again, these help socialize kids and train kids. They want to cut nutrition for pregnant and nursing women. Nutrition for kids in developing countries. We have to reach. One thing is just clear is that the world is united, right? I mean, and so what happens in Syria begins to affect what happens here. What happens in Africa affects them. It's hitting Europe more than here. But emergency food assistance. They want to cut emergency food system assistance. They want to cut. Let's see. The efforts to revive public housing. You have to reinvest in public housing. They've got a new program where they emphasize the neighborhood. So if you go in and fix up one house in a neighborhood, you're not accomplishing much. But if you look at it holistically and look at the neighborhood, what can I do? Here's where the neighborhood is at. What can I do to improve it? That's a program
but
they want to get rid of.
But they'll argue all those are a waste of money, but then they offered $57 billion to the Defense Department next year. And the Defense Department, there's no way they could ever assimilate or spend $57 billion. So the idea is, why are we putting so much money into defense when the defense doesn't even want it, but we're cutting social programs? Why do they hate people so much? This is what I don't understand. A civilized nation takes care of its people. Are we a civilized nation? Are we going down a civilized path? Or are we a military nation that always has to have the bulk of our funds going to arms for something dangerous? So we always have to have an enemy, it seems like. Right now it's Muslims who are going to attack us through airports.
But they're not even spending the money, it seems to me, on defense of the country. More aircraft carriers is going to be more projection of American power abroad.
Right.
It's going to be more intervention. It's going to be more tempting to intervene in Yemen and Somalia and so forth and so on. And Libya, we're going to get into one of these brushfire wars after another. I will say that the Obama administration kept us out of them as far as it could. But even the spending is kind of skewed. I was saying, you know, you see a beggar by the side of the road. Guy looks in really bad shape. If you believe that, you know, you share the world with everyone, you might or might not give the guy some money. Mm-hmm. It depends maybe on your mood or what. But if you believe that he's undeserving, you know, hey, look, I'll bet he just is an undeserving guy. God doesn't like him. I don't like him. The economy has told us that he's undeserving. You just walk past, you never give him anything. I think it's an attitude toward people and the world somehow, Steve, that I don't really, Mike, I really don't fully understand that mindset that you're mentioning, that the cruelty of cutting all the programs that help people.
Maybe this will help. Getting back to Robert Mercer, the Trump billionaire hedge, Mercer is a CEO of Renaissance Technologies, and this is right out of the New Yorker article, which is among the most profitable hedge funds in the country. He's a computer scientist by trade, but he's the people closest to him have no idea what his political views are. He's since there's some observers that believe, according to the article, since 2010 there's been a new brand of political activist, and that is the rich one, the extremely wealthy, who these billionaires who can write an eight-figure check. And in American politics, that's putting your thumb on the scale. That's you can swing an issue, a policy decision, an election, easily one way or the other with that kind of money. So what you have are people like Robert Mercer, who some of his employees say Trump would not be president if it wasn't for his strategy and his money.
He wanted to mess things up until he backed Trump. He wanted to mess up things that he thought.
It is an old saying. It's easy to become rich in America, but it's hard to become powerful. And when you become totally rich, then the next thing up, you don't need another boat. You don't need another $1 billion. What you want is power.
Right.
You want input. And what we've allowed to do in our politics is we've allowed the rich to now move into the powerful.
Citizens United has done exactly what Steve said. That you're right. Because of our checks and balances, because of our wonderful Constitution, because of our shared power, three branches of government, it's hard to become all powerful in the United States. Citizens United, that unfortunate Supreme Court decision in 2010, that changed everything and made the Robert Mercers and the Koch brothers possible.
I think the point that you're making is good, is there's been a movement of the very rich to seize power in the country. I mean, it's not just the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers, when they have their meeting, it's 200 or 300 very wealthy people. And you can understand that. I mean, like you say, you know, you've got all this money and there's nothing to buy, really.
Yeah.
I mean, how many yachts do you need?
Yeah.
How many houses?
But you can go to lunch with the president.
Right.
But these guys are influenced by some of the whacked out media out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they see some of these American Spectator stories or Breitbart stories, and it somehow, and occasionally anyway, meshes with what they know of the world. And so they're influenced by what I consider, what most people consider, fake news. Mercer is, once again, quoting Mayer, he is painfully awkward socially and rarely speaks. He can barely look at you in the eye when he talks, an acquaintance said.
But yet he's able to affect who's president of the United States.
His billions of dollars speak volumes.
Well, you know, in the early 50s, something like 8% of the population owned 80% of the assets in America. Okay, it had accumulated. And then through our taxing system, we were able to disperse that money back because we had graduated income tax and we had death taxes. Well, what's happening now is the money is accumulating again into probably 50 or 60 billionaires. And they're doing everything they can to protect it from taxes and death taxes.
What's
going to happen 100 years from now if this goes on? We're going to be like Europe, where we have this aristocracy of 20 families.
When I studied financial planning, probably the most corrupt area is inheritances and taxing and money. And the amount of money you can shift with almost no taxes is incredible. It's millions of dollars.
Yes.
And if you're clever, you can if it's a privately held company, I mean, you can just do anything.
There's all kinds of games you can play.
Yeah, there's all kinds of games. And as a financial planner, they taught you how to teach people how to do all these games.
If the Republicans hate the national debt so much, why doesn't each of us pay off our debt when we die? What's so hard with that?
We're shifting from the today's topic is Donald Trump and the chaos, going into this it would be a chaotic discussion because it would have to be. But I do want to mention that that according to Mayer, exactly what we've been saying for 45 minutes, Robert Mercer, billionaire behind Donald Trump, has took his playbook from David and Charles Koch, that he could invest in short-term elections and long-term ideological research. And so we don't really know what's happening to us.
I think Jane Mayer's book, when you read it, and I've just glanced through it, I haven't really read it in depth, shows you how early, I mean, the Republicans started these so-called think tanks and stuff decades ago.
The 60s scared the crap out of them.
Yeah. They started decades ago, they started planning, and Democrats didn't. And the truth is that the Democrats' allies of the unions are so weak, you know, the unions weakened over my lifetime, surely. So we have Trump. We also have an administration that's very much like Trump. And so we have, Scott
Tillerson.
Pruitt, you know, for example, gave a speech. And in one speech, he gave five significant lies. He's just like Trump. And Scott Pruitt was the Attorney General of Oklahoma, where I'm mm-hmm. from. And oil gas industry has always been the dominant industry. It's somebody you don't cross. It's where you get your money. And this guy has just been living off the oil and gas energy industry for his whole career. And he's a big sewer of the EPA. So he's in charge. It's not just Trump. There's problems with a lot of his appointees, right? I mean, they're creating as much chaos and stuff as he is, or they don't seem to get what it's like to be a public official like Tillerson. He wasn't talked to anybody. He has one conservative from a little website. He's the only guy who's allowed to accompany.
We talked about Patrick Cadell and Robert Mercer already, and Cadell is the one that came up with the press as enemy of the people.
Well,
by the way.
But you have to understand, business people think different. They think they have the ideas. They think they're smart. They make the decisions. They're used to making the decisions themselves. In public life, what you do is you ask lots of input, and you look around to see how it'll affect different people. This is not their training or their background. They are very much how's it going to affect my bottom line? This is a yes or no answer, and then they move on. Policy is very, very hard, and it's very ugly, and they're not used to making policy. Policy is made farther down. So that's why, you know, the idea of businessmen in charge of the government is scary. You know, what I think of regulation, they use regulation as a bad term because it costs business money, as if that's the ultimate answer.
That's right.
Okay? The ultimate answer is, do you want your chicken inspected? Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, the question is that do you want more mines that are walked away from and they fill up with water? I mean, these regulations do something.
Yes, exactly.
So we've got 2 minutes. Mike, Steve, any last statements? You have 1 minute, Michael.
No, there's a lot to say about all of this, and there's going to be a lot to say. But the fear of a mentally ill person in the Oval Office and the kind of people that you've been trying to say for 45 minutes that he's appointed to fill the power, the seats of government, are highly, highly questionable. Unprecedented, you know, that was been the press word for the last 3 months. They're finally calling him out. Even people like Scott Pelley are the only hope I can see out there as people like Scott Pelley and the other
CBS
journalists.
News.
Yeah, we're talking about mainstream journalism are finally almost calling every lie a lie and every disconnected thought, every broken policy, every unwise decision what it is.
Steve, you've got one.
Well,
minute.
I think what we're going to have to do is he's leave him alone for a while. He's going to lose his cover. The Republicans are at some point.
Is he going to quit?
No, but they're going to dump him when they won't find when they he won't sign their legislation. They'll turn on him.
That's very, I go with what he said. If you take anything away from today's show, take.
I thought Steve had a really interesting
idea.
Of the horrible thing is you have to let things
Republicans
sort of
will cut them loose. Listen, yeah. You can hear this show of all these wise ideas on vbid.org. vbid.org has the recordings of Democratic Perspective, all of them for 5 wonderful years. We want to thank you. And please go to our website, vbid.org, find this show and all our shows. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a beautiful day out there.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.